You know, I was kind of born into this generational curse.
I was okay with it because it was so out of my mind that I didn't even like see how terrible this lifestyle was. It was like I knew it, but I didn't care. I kind of enjoyed it.
I'm believing that this is who I am. This is how my life is. I needed these things to feel normal. I'm a junkie, I'm a criminal. All these things are things that I was believing.
Feeling less than or just having that void, you know? So I always seeked out drugs or men, anything to escape the emotional pain that I was feeling.
We were absolutely unaware of the need.
It's a picturesque Midwestern town. It touts Midwestern values and everything that's good and wholesome. If there is such a thing as a Bible Belt, Frankfort, Indiana could very well be the buckle. But bubbling beneath the surface lies what many have labeled as an epidemic in our country, addiction. It's something that is plaguing similar towns across the United States, tarnishing the sheen on that buckle. The difference in Frankfort, Indiana? There is a battle being forged. A battle where churches, organizations, community leaders, and even average citizens have come together to serve on the front lines and offer the opportunity of a new life through recovery. This is Mission Recovery. You'll hear the stories of those who struggle with addictions, the people who work alongside them during their recoveries, and how one town is making a difference. One of those making that difference is Laura Archibald, Executive Director of Healthy Communities of Clinton County.
We're really blessed in Clinton County to have both a women and a men's recovery residence. The women's recovery residence is called We Care Recovery Home. It's located here in the downtown area. They do an amazing job over there. Their biggest obstacle is having more beds that we really need to be able to expand. And they have been working really hard writing grants, trying to expand the number of people that they are able to serve. They also have a transition home for after their women graduate. Mm-hmm. Once their women graduate, they have the option to go into a transition home and live there as long as they need to. Then they go back and still help serve the women that are living in the recovery residence. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice because it keeps them plugged into the recovery residence. It is faith-based and it's ran by Jenny Gardner. She does an amazing job. And we've had a lot of women go through that program who stay in the community and then stay community leaders. They just do an amazing job over there. So if any women who are struggling with addiction are looking for a long-term recovery residence, We Care does an amazing job. And then we have 180 Recovery Resources. It just opened about a year and a half ago. They're still kind of in their learning phase. I'm on the board of directors out there, and it's a 16-bed men's recovery residence, getting ready to expand to 32 beds. So getting ready to start a construction project there with some opioid match settlement dollars through DMHA and some match dollars through the county opioid settlement dollars, and work on getting more male recovery beds. They stay pretty full as well. Mm-hmm. And it's also a faith-based recovery program. They also have a great jobs program, plugging people into really good jobs so that when they graduate from the 180 program, they are set up for success. They have a good paying job. They have some money saved. So they are also working on trying to get some transitional homes built or acquired. And so that's kind of their goal next after this expansion, is to acquire or build some transition homes. So we're really blessed to have both a men's and women's faith-based recovery homes here in Clinton County.
Every addict has a unique story. Just as unique is their recovery. Here's Randy's story.
I grew up in a broken home. When my father was 16 years old, his brother died in a drunk driving accident where my grandpa was actually driving the car. My grandpa was drunk driving a vehicle, and he killed his own son in a wreck. and he ended up going to jail for this, and it really affected my whole family. At this point, my father quit school and he started drinking. Him and my mother had me when they were 18 years old. So they were young, they were very immature. When I was a baby, I ended up being in jail in my mom's stomach before I was even born. She went to jail for stealing my dad a pack of cigarettes, and she didn't even smoke. So, you know, I was kind of born into this generational curse. In fifth grade, I ended up drinking alcohol, just really seeing violence and darkness, and my whole family was on drugs and drinking, and they were depressed. My mother and father ended up divorcing when I was in fifth grade. That really affected me. I was upset with my mother, but my dad was an alcoholic. She couldn't take it anymore, so she ends up getting a divorce with my father, and I ended up starting to live the wrong way, trying to hang out with older people, trying to fill that emptiness that I had. At that point, I think I started smoking marijuana, running with kids that I should have never been around. This progressed and it got worse and worse. I ended up doing just well enough in school to be able to play basketball, because that was a saving grace for me that I love sports. But I was still living a bad life. I did poorly in school and I was just hurt and broken. My mother was a single mom. She worked as hard as she could to provide for us kids, but she couldn't be around all the time. I ended up hanging out with the wrong type of people who were doing bad and they wanted me to do bad with them. This progressed till I was 16 years old. My father was drinking in Monticello, and he was waiting to get on the Madam Carol, and he ended up drowning. So now I'm 16, my father drowns. At that point, partying went from a hobby to a lifestyle. I was drinking every day. Doctor prescribed me Xanax. So when I started taking the Xanax and drinking, I was having a memory loss. You know, I was going out and I was partying, and I didn't know what I was doing for weeks at a time. I look back on it now and I know that God was in my life even then, because I really shouldn't be here if it wasn't for Him. During these times, I would get out and I would party and forget things, and then I would see people and they'd be like, "Randy, what's going on? Like, who are you?" It was so bad, I didn't even remember people I'd met the night before because I was drunk and I was on benzos. So that continued. I get a job roofing and I hurt my back. When I hurt my back, the doctor gave me hydrocodones. Now people know that they're very addictive, but back then it wasn't as well known as it is now. I ended up getting addicted to those. I met a wonderful woman. I got married. I had children. So I tried to stop partying. What really hit me is I was in jail when my first daughter was born. And at that point, I thought, man, I can't be doing this anymore. So I tried the best I could to quit, but there's always something missing. It wasn't long before the pain pills stopped. The doctor stopped giving me those, but I was already addicted. So I went to the streets, started morphine, and then that turned into heroin. For 13 years, I abused heroin. I have a lot of people who are trying to support me and trying to help me, but I just pushed them away. I stole from everybody who cared about me. I was in a horrible dark spot. So by this time, I'm still married. My wife always seen something in me that I never even seen. So she stuck by my side through everything. We end up having 4 children. I've been battling heroin addiction for 13 years, and I'm trying everything that I can do to quit. I've tried rehabs, I've tried everything, and I just keep hurting the people who love me the most. So I got to a really dark point. My wife had to take the kids and leave, and I'm all by myself. I'd been on drugs, and I was so tired of hurting my family that I just wanted to kill myself. I was in a spot where I always promised, hey, I'll get better. And I tried my best to do better, but I never could do it. There was something missing, right? So now I'm in a room all by myself, and I'm contemplating suicide. And I look over, and I see a Bible in the closet, which was a miracle because my family was so upset at God because of the death of my uncle and other things that they weren't religious. But I see my great-grandma's Bible sitting in the closet. And at this point, I'm tired. I'm broken. So I reach for this Bible and I pray over it. And at that point, angels came down and, you know, they just picked me up and lifted me up. I'm just kidding. There were no angels that came down, but what did come down was a peace from God. I got enough peace that night to not do something stupid, to not take my own life. It was amazing. The next morning, I wake up and my whole life is built on hustling people, stealing to get my next fix. When I went to do that, I felt bad. And I thought, God, what is this? This is my whole life. This is how I get high, you know. This is what my whole life is based on. And at that point in my life, I felt conviction for the first time. God started to sanctify me through His Holy Spirit and completely changed my life. It wasn't a all of a sudden thing. So I ended up going to Trinity Life Ministries, which is a Christian life transformation program. And, you know, I went from knowing who Christ was to knowing how to walk with Christ. Mm-hmm. And Jesus put so many amazing people in my life to just show me how much He loves me. You know, anyone listening to this, don't ever forget that, because the enemy wants to take away that glory from God. But God used so many people in my life to show me how much that He loved me and help get me on the right track.
Randy's story is unique, but his recovery points to one vital ingredient to recovery. It takes many people to come alongside him in recovery to help fill that void. Keegan and Corey were headed down destructive paths. Their roads to recovery also brought them together.
I grew up in church. Really, the only reason I went to church till my mom and my grandma went, and they kind of forced my hand a little bit, but I remember all those times of being in church. I went through like confirmation and youth group and all church camp, all these things, and I always remember sitting in the pews and listening to the sermons and being like, leaving that day and be like, well, that one wasn't for me. Maybe next time. And it's like, I always had those thoughts. The older I got, I don't know if I realized the less power my mom had over me. She loosened the reins a little bit, but she stopped making me go, so I didn't go. And really, that was the start of, and if I'm being honest, probably before that, but there's just a start of living for myself. By my senior year in high school, I was like drinking every weekend. Went away to college. Being away from home is like, I realized like, oh, I can make my own rules. I can do my own stuff. And like, I'm the one that's in charge. And that led me down a lot of bad paths. It progressed from drinking all the way. So I spent like a decade of my life addicted to heroin and meth. Led me to a lot of bad places, you know. Led me to a lot of places that I never thought I'd be, things I never thought I'd do. And really what it was is I was believing lies, right? It's like, I'm believing that this is who I am. This is how my life is. I needed these things to feel normal. I'm a junkie, I'm a criminal. All these things are things that I was believing. The sad part is I was okay with it, right? I was okay with living that way, and I don't want to say generally liked it, but I didn't have a problem with it. You know, I'd go to jail. My thoughts all the time were, I can't wait to get out. Can't wait to get out so I can hit the ground running again, you know what I mean? This is just a pause button. This undercurrent in my life, though, I was always praying. I never saw God moving. I'm sure He was, you know, but my eyes weren't open and I couldn't see it. Every time I'd pray, though, I had these two thoughts. One, God's not real. God's not real, and if He is real, He doesn't care what I have to say. So I always had those two thoughts, but I was like, you know what, I'm going to pray just in case, because, you know, being raised in church is like, you know, that's just what we do. So I never really said, oh, I'm going to do better. I'm going to do better. The last time I was in jail was 2018, and I said, you know what, this time I'm going to try to do better. I'm going to try to do better. I was married then. We were in a drug-induced, and just like, hey, let's go get married, and we did. And I think some of that is what was driving me wanting to get better, because she had a little daughter. We got arrested together. I was leaving. She was staying. I was like, well, someone has to be there for the daughter, right? And I was like, oh, I'm going to do that. I think this time I got out. Normally, I'm using within an hour of getting out. This time, I think maybe I made it like 2 days. I hadn't been around for like a week, and it just hit me. Keegan, what are you doing? I remember I had this friend who, he was a bunkie of mine in jail in like 2017. I would stay up all night and read and then try to sleep all day. He never read. I went to go to church on Mondays just to get out of the pod, right? He never went. And then this last time in 2018, he was my bunkie again. And this time he would be staying up reading, but he was reading his Bible. And he was doing Bible studies in people's cells and stuff. And I knew that he had been to his place called Trinity in Crawfordsville. I know, looking at it, back at it now, God was using him to plant a seed in my life to show me, you know, yeah, did he still have struggles? Yeah, he did. But he was changed because he was reading the Bible and he was doing things I had never seen him do before. So I had gotten out and I'd been gone for a week and I was like, you know, Keegan, what are you doing? And I had a friend who was at Trinity in Crawfordsville, and he had been also to the Home of Hope in Lafayette. And I was on probation at the time, and I was like, you know, what I'm doing is what I always do. I get out, I report to probation, and then I never come back, and then they come and find me and they arrest me, and it's just this vicious cycle. So I'm thinking, you know, how can I break this cycle? So I was talking to him, I was like, you know, you've been to the Home of Hope, you're at Trinity now, you know, which one's better, where should I go? He's like, dude, just come to Trinity. So I had filled out an application and wrote a letter along with it, and calling and checking on it, no one's answering the phone. And in the meantime, I go to Sycamore Springs to detox. By the time, like 5 days, they had to do a Suboxone taper. So by the time the Suboxone ran out, I'm like telling them whatever I can tell them so I can leave. I'm telling them, you know, hey, as soon as I get out of here, I'm going to Trinity. I've already got it lined up, you know. And I hadn't even talked to Trinity. I just filled out an application. They released me. My dad came and picked me up. We got back to Frankfurt, and within like an hour, I'm going to the city to get drugs. 2 days later, I'm sitting at a friend's house, we're all high, and we're playing cards, and just in the middle of a card game, something comes over me, and he's like, you know, call and check on the application. So I pick up my phone, and I call. This lady answers, and I'm telling her, you know, hey, I'm Keegan, and I'm checking on my application. And she says, oh, yeah, you have an interview today at 1 in Crawfordsville. And this is like noon. Awesome. You know, awesome. I don't think I can make it there at 1. I can make it there at 2. I get there. It's different there. It's different than any place I've ever been. I'm running into guys, and they don't even know me, and they're like trying to give me hugs, and they're like, you know, hey, I'm such and such. Hey, nice to meet you. You know, I'm glad you're here or whatever. So I do this interview with Brandon, and he says, you know, hey, we're going to accept you. He said, hey, this is like July. He said, our next phase doesn't start until September. I'm like, you know, hey, I don't know where I'm going to be in September. Jail, dead, something. He said, well, we have a bed available, come back tomorrow. And that's what I did. Everything was different there than what I had ever experienced. People who'd never met me genuinely cared. One guy, as soon as I got there, is like, hey, do you have this? Do you have that? Do you have that? If you don't, I got it. And if I don't have it, I'll get it for you. And that was cool. I never experienced people doing that out of the kindness of their heart, you know. And I know, you know, it's for the love of Jesus. Now, guys were quoting the Bible. They were talking about Jesus like they were just hanging out like we are now. And I was struggling with that, you know, because I was struggling whether God was really real, because I had these thoughts like God's not real and he's not listening. He doesn't care. And it was attractive, right? Like these guys had something that I didn't have. And I wanted it. It was discouraging because I didn't have it. But I think that was something, you know, God put in my heart, and it drove me. Because it drove me. I had these, I armed myself with this attitude when I got there. It's like, Keegan, whatever you would normally do, let's do the opposite. Because what you normally do is not working. Man, that really paid off for me. And I remember I hadn't been there very long. I'm laying in bed, and I'm tossing and I'm turning. I've maybe been there maybe a month. I get up and I get out of bed and I get down on my knees I'm gonna pray. I say, hey God, look, I don't know if you're real. If you're real, I need some faith. I need a little bit of faith that I see all these guys around me that they have. I need that to be able to believe in you. And if you can do that for me, I will surrender my life to you. I mean, I'm telling you, I got up, laid down, the most peaceful sleep I'd ever had, ever. Ezekiel 36:26, God says, I will take your heart of stone from your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit in you, and I will move you to obey all my commands. And I know that's the day that God had took my heart of stone and give me that heart of flesh, because after that, things began to change, right? I began to think about others more than myself. I began to have this hunger and this desire to spend time with God, to be in his word. So one of the classes they teach, identity, is like this big thing they teach, because so many people, we believe these false things about ourselves, right? I was telling you, I was believing I was a junkie, I'm a criminal, I'm all these things, and this is all I'm going to be, and this is probably how I'm going to die, and I'm okay with that. In this class, the life coach, Mitch, he was teaching 2 Corinthians 5:17. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has passed away, and behold, the new has come. And it began, that was, you know, one of the first verses that God really, like, kind of smacked me in the face with, and is like, is this true? Like, so I'm grabbing a hold of this verse, and it's like, No, the things that I'm believing about myself, that's not the way that Jesus sees me, right? Like, if I'm in Christ, like, he is making all things new. Because I struggled with this yesterday, it doesn't mean that I have to do that today. He's going to empower that. He's going to work that out. When God really revealed that to me, it's like things really began to change. So I stayed there. I graduated in 2020. I stayed on as a steward. So I was helping out. My plan was I wanted to be a life coach because I wanted to help guys. Like, dude, it was so cool to see. Like, I always tell about this guy. He came in and he was just proclaimed atheist. You know, he was there because he wanted to please his family or whatever. And it's like 3 or 4 months in, and we're in a prayer night, and he's praying out loud openly to a God that he 4 months ago didn't believe in. You know, and that stuff was so cool, and I, you know, that was what was driving me. This verse is what I always think about. You know, this is how my life was. And you were dead in your trespasses and sins, in which you formerly walked, according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now working in the sons of disobedience. Among them, we too all formerly lived in the lusts of our flesh, indulging the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, even as the rest. But God, being rich in mercy because of the great love with which he loved us. Right? We all have that "but God" moment in our lives. As a steward, I'm there and I'm doing things. My mom, she goes to St. Matthew's, and her and Mary Kay wanted to start the Brand of Hope. It was like the very second meeting I went and I shared my testimony, and then they were, you know, kind of struggling to have people come and share whatever. And I was like, you know, I got a house of 40 guys that would love to come and share. So that we started coming regularly. That's where me and Corey met, as at Brandon's Hope.
My name's Corey. I'm 29. I grew up in Frankfurt in a very dysfunctional home. My mom had some mental illness and just very emotionally distant, which took a pretty big toll on me. So when I was 9, my mom left my dad. He got on drugs and he took it really hard. I took it really hard and didn't have anyone to process any of that with. Seeing my dad on drugs and how that affected him was really hard and traumatic. So around like 9 or 10, I just fell into this deep sadness at such a young age. And I think around 12, I started to be promiscuous, and, you know, I didn't have any discipline. I didn't have any guidance. So, you know, I pretty much fell into all the wrong behaviors. I was looking for love. It was nowhere to be found in my life for a very long time. 13, I started to experiment with alcohol, marijuana. My dad had went to prison for 4 to 6 years. So that was traumatic to, you know, go visit my dad in prison. Because I will say about my dad, he was very loving and very emotionally there for me before the drugs. So losing that when he went to prison was very hard for me. The drugs, probably around 14, marijuana was regular. I tried my first pills. The pills was what took hold of me because I could have confidence and I didn't have fear and I didn't care. It helped me to not care because I was tired of caring, honestly. So I lived my life like that, very toxic patterns, toxic relationships, pretty much just a life of sin. You know, I didn't grow up with Jesus or God being talked about in our home. I can look back and see where God was planting seeds in my life at a young age because I always did believe in God. I just didn't follow him. It wasn't like a thing in my life. I got into a relationship at 15 with a guy who's almost 10 years older than me, who really, really exposed me to a lot more drugs. That's where my addiction really, really started. I got prescribed to a narcotic medication at 15. That really took hold of me. That's where it took hold of me, the pills. And then we had 2 kids. They ended up getting into the system, and at 19, I signed my rights over to them because I just couldn't do it anymore. Deep down, I knew it was the right choice for them. Looking back now, you know, at the time, all of it was really hard, obviously, but like looking back now, that was God, because I couldn't have done it at that time. I hadn't even been to my worst yet at that time. So it was like God protecting them. And that was when I got on hard drugs. I started to use heroin. I wanted to use heroin and die. That was what was in my mind. That relationship crumbled, obviously, and directly into another one. Had another child with him. Same kind of behavior, like just broken. We ended up breaking up, and then I went to jail for a year. My son went with his family. Then I got on meth. You know, up to this point, I still kind of had my family a little bit. You know, everybody wasn't completely done with me. But I'd always been in a relationship. I'd always been in a relationship where I had someone who was helping me be okay, pretty much. When I didn't have that, after getting out of jail, I really didn't know what to do. And I didn't have my kids, so I pretty much just was like, okay, you know, and I just started to do meth and party and be up for weeks and rob people and steal and just, you know, that went on for a couple years. And fast forward to the point when, you know, I was all the way broken. Living in Lafayette and I was homeless. I was literally walking around with a duffel bag of everything I owned, going to random locations to charge my phone or use Wi-Fi, like going days without eating, days without sleeping, having nowhere to sleep. It was terrible. But I was okay with it because it was so out of my mind that I didn't even like see how terrible this lifestyle was at the time. It was like I knew it, but I didn't care. I kind of enjoyed it in my mind. And then finally, people to use ran out. I exhausted everything. My mom was done. Everybody was done. I was walking around one night, like 3 a.m. My phone was dead. I had no money. I was literally walking down the street, knocking on doors to charge my phone. Somebody let me come in and charge my phone. And long story short, I left the next day, one shoe on, like duffel bag. And I was like, God, I don't know what to do. So I called my mom and I'm bawling and I'm begging her, please let me come back home one more time. Like, I promise you I will change. Mind you, she's heard this a lot. And even though she was emotionally distant, she was there for me and she does care about me and love me. But so she said yes, and I went to her house in Frankfort. I knew I needed someone that would be good for me and support me. And so I reached out to one of my teachers who had a relationship with Jesus and we had bonded when I was in high school. She picked me up and I started going to different meetings with her, Celebrate Recovery. And I was in her kitchen and she pretty much just asked me like if I wanted to give my life to Jesus, like if I was sorry for everything. And I just broke down crying and I asked God to forgive me and to come into my heart, and I gave my life to Christ that day. And that was August 2018. Then I go back to my mom's and 3 days later, I go back to life, right? It was what I knew. It was what was comfortable. So it was easy. You know, I didn't want to do anything too hard. It was different though, because the Holy Spirit lived in me, because I meant it that day. I had new convictions I didn't have before. I started like seeing evil around me that I didn't see before. I was completely blind to it. And where I was at, this house I was at, I had $600. The door was wide open. I felt the presence of evil around me. The verse came to me, there's no temptation where God won't provide the way out. The door was wide open. I was like, God, okay, I'm going to go. I threw the money under the couch, $600. Mind you, I have nothing. Threw it under the couch, literally left everything I had, just walked and ran, like walked so fast. And I walked like 4 or 5 miles through Lafayette that day until the teacher I told you about picked me up. And I just felt this spiritual battle going on for my soul. I really did. I knew. I didn't at the time. It was very scary for me, but that's what it was. I can look back and see, okay, the enemy was fighting for my soul at that moment because he lost someone who was leading people into sin and doing his work, living for him on his side. And Jesus pulled me out of that, the kingdom of darkness, and brought me into the kingdom of light. So there was this powerful battle going on. And, you know, not to say it's over now, because it's not, you know, it's an everyday thing. But that point, I mean, that pull was just so strong on me. I went into a recovery home and God literally just transformed me in 6 months. I mean, not completely, but he did. He changed the desires in my heart. I was in his word all the time. I just had this hunger for him and his word. I didn't want to get high anymore. I actually wanted to be a better person, and I didn't realize like, whoa, like I can live life and be normal. I can go to work and I can have God, the biggest blessing I had at that time was God provided me a family, a church family, who literally is a means that God used to transform my entire life. These people, being the hands and feet of Jesus in my life, if they weren't there, I would not be here right now giving my testimony, because they loved me and no one else did. I mean, maybe they did, but they didn't know how. And these people loved me and accepted me because I went and relapsed after that, probably 6 or 7 times. I went to 6 or 7 programs, and every time I was convicted when I got high. When I used again, I was convicted, and I was like, God, please. He wouldn't let me enjoy it like he used to. I couldn't enjoy it. I was miserable every time, and that's such a blessing looking back. Like, thank you, God, that you didn't let me enjoy it anymore. Finally, after the 6th program I went to WeCare here in Frankfurt, who actually is opened, 2 women from my church family opened it. After dealing with me and one of my friends, they saw the need for it because they saw us continue to struggle. And so anyway, she let me come there. And she really didn't want to, but she was taking a chance on me because she had been there to pick me up when I wrecked my car drunk and pick me up from a program or take me to a new one. And, you know, she had been there through all that, and she's like, oh, you know, I don't know. Like, she probably didn't feel like I was ready. And I didn't even know if I was, but I was like, I had nothing else. And interesting enough, the day I got saved was August 10th, 2018. And then 2 years later, August 10th, 2020 was when I went to WeCare and never used a drug or drink again. And literally, like, God did more of his work there through me. He changed more desires. He went deeper with me. I was there for almost a year until I graduated in July 2021. He had set me free and delivered me from ever wanting to go back to drugs or the men. There were just a lot of deeper things that he worked with me on, like forgiveness from my past, and I was able to really find, like, true freedom from my addiction.
True freedom and a new path and a new life together for Keegan and Corey. Recovery doesn't happen overnight. Weeks turn into months, months into years. This is Heather's story.
I've struggled with addiction for probably about 25 years, for a very long time. 2 years ago, I decided that I really needed help. I knew I wanted God to be a part of that. So I reached out to Jennifer Gardner, the director of WeCare Recovery Home here in Frankfurt, and started talking with her. And a couple months later, that's where I was. So I stayed there, graduated last year. So it was a year program, moved out of there and then into their transition home, which I currently live in now. Mm-hmm. And I still am part of WeCare and work for them one day a week. And honestly, with my addiction, WeCare is what saved my life in God. You know, they allowed me a safe place to recover in, and they showed me God's love, and I had never experienced that. I'll go back to my childhood. At 12, my parents abandoned me. So I always grew up feeling less than, or just having that void, you know. So I always seeked out drugs or men, anything to escape the emotional pain that I was feeling. Mm-hmm. That lasted a really long time. And, you know, it was finally when my parents had passed away. And, you know, over the years, we had kind of, my mother and I especially had rekindled our relationship. But when my parents had passed away, it was just, I was all alone in my hometown. And it just hit me. And I had nobody. And I was just struggling. I just started praying to God, you know, and he led me to WeCare, and I just feel like that's where my heart is today. I feel like I owe them. I don't owe it to them, mm-hmm. but in a sense, it's like I want to be a part of other people's recovery and helping them, because today that gives me a purpose. It's just having other people to help. I have 2 years sober coming up this Thursday, but it was about a year into my recovery I started getting close with Laura Archibald with Healthy Communities, and she had offered me a part-time job. And so I started working in recovery events and different things in this community. And I was already pretty, you know, close with the recovery community. And, you know, I showed up to a lot of things anyway. And so working there, maybe about 6 months, I was like, wow, this is where it's at. This is what, you know, my new passion. So they put me through training to be a peer recovery coach. So just a couple months ago, we opened the Trinity Hope Center. And that's just been a huge blessing. it's crazy that when you change your life and start living for Him, how He will just start, you know, it says in the Bible that He will give you the desires of your heart. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe that because He is, you know, He's restored my relationship with my kids. I have a great community and a support of people that I've never had my whole life. I have an amazing job as a peer recovery coach that I can help other people in addiction with We Care. You know, God has really transformed me. And, you know, even 2 years ago, if you would ask, like, I didn't ever think there was a way out. That's just how bad I felt, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And just today, to be a whole new person, you know, I'm a new creation. That's just amazing what Jesus can do for you. It still blows my mind to look back and be like, wow, look at all the things. You know, he's renewed my mind. You know, He's freed me from addiction. Mm-hmm. You know, He's restored relationships with my children and gave me this family of people around me that's really helped me to strive and be the person that I've always known to be. That's just what love can do.
This family of people is Heather's support system. That's really a system of care that surrounds her and many others in the Frankfort community. Let's look now at those people, those who come together to make recovery possible. This is Mary Kay Baker from Brianna's Hope.
I was on staff as a children's ministry director, outreach person. And during that time, I was just trying to think, what else could we do, you know, to bring the community into our church? I had a pastor friend that was over at the church in Lafayette, and she invited me over to attend this group. And so I attended Brianna's Hope in Lafayette. I thought, oh my gosh, you know, these people, they need some love. And some of them are getting out of prison. They've been in there forever, and they couldn't even, you know, learning to walk on cement, you know, the grass was so hard for them. And, you know, their kids have been taken away, and it's like, what can I do? They've lost their family, and it was just heartbreaking. And so I came back to Frankfort and presented it all to my church. At that time, St. Matthew wasn't ready to move forward. So then I reached out to a friend of mine, Kathy Martin, that works for Healthy Communities here in Frankfort, and I shared with her about Brianna's Hope, and I said, would you go over there with me? So we went over there, and she said, this is what we need. This is exactly what we need in Clinton County. So we came back, and we had some hurdles we had to jump through, and it didn't happen right away. You know, it's all in God's timing. But when it did finally happen during COVID, Brianna's Hope took off in at Frankfort. It's a participant-driven organization. And we have community churches all involved. St. Matthew is the host site. There's 13 other denominations involved in Brianna's Hope, so it's non-denominational. We meet every Thursday night, just a chance to love on these people and show them that we do care about their journey. And, you know, we all make mistakes, and we all have addictions of some sort, you know. During that time, I thought, you know, that'd be a good time for me to try to lose weight because that's my addiction is food. And surely if they can do it, I can do it. And I don't understand their struggles, but I feel like I do understand their struggles because of what I've gone through with food. It's so easy for temptation and to fall off. And I understand. We all make mistakes. We're all going to do it. So it's my goal on Thursday nights just to let them know that, you know, when there's no judgment here, we all love one another, and we're just so happy that they come. I cry when they cry, and it's awesome. They're my kids. That's why I keep telling them, they're my kids.
Putting the pieces together, filling in the needs, creating a community of care. Here's Laura Archibald from Healthy Communities of Clinton County.
I first got involved in the recovery movement when Mary Kay and Kathy came to me. Kathy is my director of operations. Mary Kay and I have been friends for years and years, and they came to me to pitch the idea of doing a Brianna's Hope here in Clinton County. And I said, if you guys are sold on it, I trust both of you. And so I wrote some grants, because that's what I do, and found the funding for us to start. I said, I'll find you the money. You guys do all the work. And that worked out really well. And so that's how we really started Brianna's Hope. And Healthy Communities still helps support the efforts of Brianna's Hope. It was very interesting because we were doing that, but we didn't have a big hand in the active day-to-day. I would go if people asked me or told me they were going to give their testimony, and I had some connections to people in recovery, and I would go on occasion. But that was the extent of my involvement. And then one day on the way home from a conference, one of my employees who had been working for me for a couple of years shared with me that she was in recovery, and I was unaware of it at that point. that she really wanted to do more for our recovery community than what was happening, and that she was interested in becoming a peer recovery coach. Mm-hmm. I said, all right, let's do it. I said, we got to research this, figure out how we're going to do this, what it looks like. I said, but we'll make it happen. And so we did. And that's what Nikki Dell and I did. She went and took the classes. I took the peer recovery coach supervisor training. And really, we had nothing to base it on. I mean, we started our program from scratch. I think everybody's program probably looks a little bit different, and that's okay, because it's like everybody's path to recovery. It's a little different. Yes. So our program doesn't look probably like anybody else's program, and that's okay. We started that program from scratch, and we were absolutely unaware of the need. The program has grown by leaps and bounds. We now have 6 peer recovery coaches, and we have over 300 active clients on peer recovery services. Probably a year into having peer recovery coach services, we brought on Chris Ward. He has a passion and a fire for everything recovery, and just kind of took everything that we did to the next level, kind of like recovery on steroids, you know, and our recovery efforts have just grown, and it ended up that we opening the Trinity Hope Center. At that same time, we were awarded a large grant through the Lilly Endowment and the Community Foundation of Clinton County, and we partnered with Mental Health America and Turning Point. So this is a tri-county collaboration. And through that grant opportunity, we've really been able to make a lot of strides. So we added what's called System of Care Navigation Services. Mm-hmm. One of the things we really found was that if people are worried about if they can feed their kids or where they're going to lay their head at night or how to pay the electric, they can't concentrate on getting addiction services, right? Because you have to meet that Maslow hierarchy of need, right? And so if they have all of those things going on, they can't concentrate on getting better. We kind of tag team them with peer recovery coaches. What we kept hearing was, we need a safe place to do safe activities with safe people. And it was this like nagging thing that we kept hearing. And Chris and I kept saying, we've got to do something about that. And then that's kind of where the Trinity Hope Recovery Activity Center came in.
Necessity leads to innovation. Seeing the need and filling it. For the next step, we look to Chris Ward, director of Trinity Help Center.
There was a need. The pieces fell exactly how they should. There was an opportunity that had become available through a building that was inherited by St. Matthew United Methodist Church, and just so happened at that point we needed room. We needed space. We were exploding. We went from what seemed like 50 clients to 250 overnight, and we needed a new home because we just outgrown our space. So the opportunity became quickly available to go into the old Trinity United Methodist Church, and so that's how we get the Trinity Hope Center, through a partnership with St. Matt. Super excited about that. So we just essentially moved all of Healthy Communities Recovery Programming to the Trinity Hope Center. And we stay busy. We have 6 certified addiction peer recovery coaches. And what a peer recovery coach is they're someone in sustained recovery, someone who has a lived experience in addiction. And it's cool because all of our peer recovery coaches have a completely different path to recovery, a completely different background. So it's awesome to be able to diversify those experiences and then be able to assign clients to a particular coach according to their path to recovery. We've got over 300 active clients. We're doing pro-social activities every Saturday, even during holidays, because again, we just wanted to give people safe things to do and a safe place. We've been working with United Way for Clinton County. They fund all of our family nights, and those things are awesome. We have 200 to 300 people show up for those things, and it's where each one's different. So in June, it was Family Recovery Day at Sapphire Bay, which is our new water park here. So we just paid for everybody that was in recovery and their children to come over and to replace those self-destructive memories with awesome ones. We sit back and listen to laughter, and we know that this is our why. It's always our why. But we serve food at all of those, and we've got feedback that sometimes that might be the only food, the only meal, rather, for that day. So it definitely gives us a why. We try to do something every evening. Thursday is the only evening that we don't, because that's when Brown's Hope is, and we don't want to compete with Brown's Hope. We want to make sure that there's a whole lot of participation there as it's a partnership. So we do things like recovery rock painting. I didn't realize that was a thing. Someone had the idea. I thought it was ridiculous, but thought we would try it, and it exploded. Everybody wanted to come paint rocks, and then the next week just went and went on a recovery walk club, and then they placed the rocks around our community to inspire others. We have pound fitness courses. We have relapse prevention, pre and postnatal support groups. We have recovery cafes for men, women, and couples. We started a new meditation group. Just a little bit of everything. So we're busy all the time, and it's super cool. We just stay engaged, and we listen to them. We meet them where they're at, and we stay engaged with the clients. And if we get some feedback on a particular service that's wanted or needed, we try all we can to make that happen.
It's that making it happen attitude that has brought together the community to turn the tide on addictions. Hear how our recovering friends are now serving the recovery community.
So now I have a lot of good things going on. I work and do concrete and asphalt work. I work with three younger guys, and you know, they're starting to love the Lord. And my family loves Jesus. I have a wonderful pastor. I've been able to go into the jail, and I have a Christian life recovery class that God has put me in these men's lives. And when I come into that jail to do those classes, I'm not having to tell these guys like, hey, sit down, it's class time. These guys are sitting there waiting with their Bibles, ready to open it up and get into God's Word. A man gave his life to Christ a couple weeks ago, and you know, I'm just so happy how Jesus has saved me through His amazing grace. There was nothing that I did to deserve that. God loves me so much. He's called me out of darkness. He's got me a job at a Trinity Life Center, and now I'm going to be a recovery coach there. Things have been great. The most amazing part is that through Jesus Christ, I've broken this generational curse. Now my children love the Lord. They're not gonna have to see people get hurt like I have. They're not gonna have to live in a broken home full of addiction. They know that their Father loves Jesus. His Holy Spirit has changed me, and it's just branched out to my whole family and to the rest of the community. What is going on in this recovery community in Frankfort is all by the grace of God. I go to Brianna's Hope at St. Matthew's, and 2 years ago when I started at Brianna's Hope, we had 10 people there. I think last week we had 72 people at Brianna's Hope. Look at what God's done. 72 people giving glory to Christ, walking miracles, that have been homeless, they've been broken in addiction, and now they've felt that love of Jesus Christ, and now we're out there trying to share the gospel with others.
So right now, I currently work at 180 Recovery. I'm the daytime supervisor there. It's how I describe it, you know, Christ-centered, evidence-based recovery home for men. My heart is to help guys. Yeah, I want to see them set free from addiction, right? I want to see them saved, too. Mm-hmm. And that's truly my heart. And it's just cool, like I said, to see those guys changing, and God calls us to be ministers of His Word, no matter what our job is vocationally, right? And it's a blessing to be able to do that as a job. I just started Bible college in January, so I'm getting ready to start my second semester. All that aside, you know, the biggest ministry is at home, right? It's like her, our children. We have two kids, two under two. Mm-hmm. So thing that's most awesome about that is because of what God's done in our life, they have the opportunity to know Jesus, mm-hmm. you know, from an early age. And like I said, I went to church growing up, but it was like we went to church on Sunday and that was it. And do we fall short in that? You know, yes, we do, but we want to make sure that reading the Bible, worshiping, praying together, like these things, we want to make sure that those are staples in our home.
For me, the first thought was definitely being a mom is the biggest, because, you know, that's something that's definitely making me more Christ-like right now. Because, you know, your life's not your own anymore. And looking, you know, like I said, I have three children that I'm not able to be in their life. That's another amazing transformation, just to be able to be a present mother who is a good mother. That right there just says everything. I help at WeCare. WeCare is a recovery home for women who struggle with addiction. So there's like I don't know, usually 6 to 10 women there. I will do devotions or teach class or give rides or, you know, I mentor a girl right now. And I just try to do my best with just being real and, you know, sharing my testimony. You know, that's the biggest thing is some of them know me and know me from then. And so it's like, that's a testimony in itself. Mm-hmm. And then I do jail ministry. So going to the jail and do church with the women in there. That's been very powerful. There was one week that literally 7 women gave their life to Christ. That is amazing. And I saw a quote the other day that said, there are souls attached to you doing the will of God. There's souls attached to you for you doing the will of God. And I'm like, that's powerful to think me doing the will of God is saving souls from hell.
From recovery to redemption to serving. The path reflects the lives that invested in them, and now they are investing in others. But it doesn't end here. Today could be your day, your new path.
We're so blessed in this community to have the resources we have for people in recovery, but it is not limited to this community. If you're in another county, another city, and you need support, come on over, because we'll love on you. We will wrap you in services. I know Brianna's Hope will take you from wherever you live, and so will we at Healthy Communities in Trinity. There are no boundaries, geographic boundaries or any other type of boundaries that will stop us from helping you and assisting you in your recovery journey. This is a great place because we do have our city and our city council and our county commissioners and our county council, Frankfort Police Department. We have all of these people in leadership positions that have made it a unique place to live if you're in recovery. If you are somebody struggling and you're outside of this community, come to this community because this is the place that we can help you.
Mission Recovery is a production of Shine.fm, a ministry of Olivet Nazarene University. Thanks for listening.